This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Fantasy freaks and geeks, it's James Kell from the Sleeper King Football Podcast. We all know sleepers can win you championships, but finding these guys takes time. That's where the Sleeper King comes in. Let me do all the research so you don't have to. Every week, I'm going to break down which sleepers you need to pick up off the waiver wire and which surprise deep sleepers could help you win the week. Every episode, just 15 to 20 minutes long, every Tuesday through Friday. Subscribe to the Sleeper King Football Podcast on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your pods.
Welcome back to Grant and Danny on the Fan. Austin Eckler is on the show at 5 o'clock, coming up in 55 minutes.
As Washington continues to build the foundation of success on and off the field this season, it's time for you, yes you, to plan for your future as well. As the exclusive sponsor of our show, the law firm of Condori and Morad can help you update your last will and testament or set up a revocable trust for you and your family. Schedule a free consultation with their estate planning attorneys today by visiting kmlawyers.com and be sure to tell them the Grant and Danny sent you. That is kmlawyers.com.
I'm still bummed that we're not able to go to their holiday party they invited us to. That's coming up this week, but we're flying to New Orleans, so we're going to miss it.
That's right.
And it's at one of my favorite restaurants, actually, too. So shout out to them for inviting us. That would have been really, really cool to go kick it with them.
How kind is that?
Well, they're just the nicest guys.
Yeah, they're just such friendly dudes.
They flew us to Cincinnati to watch a big win. They flew us to Philly for a business trip. We don't count that as a loss.
It's not a loss.
Because we just went as a business trip. To take in some football while we were there. It is time to go blitzing. We'll cover the Wizards and the Commanders on our blitz, but we start on the ice. Friend of the program, friend of yours and friend of mine, Alexa Landestoy joins us. Alexa, how are you doing? Thanks for a few minutes. What's up?
What's up, guys? Doing well, and the Caps are hot, so it's always fun when we're winning and so many storylines to follow.
Yeah, I tell you what, as well as you, sounds like you're doing, the Caps are doing better, respectfully. Because they're the best team in hockey right now, according to a lot of the power rankings, tops in the NHL in points. We're talking about not just trying to make the playoffs, but maybe trying to win a President's Trophy as they get ready for another game on Thursday, a well-deserved break. How about two games, two wins, two nights, and 4 points against the Maple Leafs and Canadiens in Canada this weekend?
Yeah, that was really incredible. Because to your point, I think all of us in D.C. were taking notice of what the Capitals were doing and their wins and stacking them up and at the top of the Metro. But it was still kind of like the whole hockey world. You'd hear rumblings or are people giving them credit. And I think getting those two wins, starting off in Toronto, then going to Montreal, coming back in the third period to win. I mean, Tom Wilson's incredibly gutsy performance on top of that. Like, the Canadian media is now on board for the Washington Capitals and seeing that this team is legit, this team is for real. There's a bunch of different players who really come into their own this season. So I think it really solidified them. And now I'm up at NHL Network right now in New Jersey, and all the analysts are asking me, what's up with you guys? You guys are playing great. So I think we've got the league on notice now with the amount of wins that we've strung together here.
Even with Tom Wilson's swollen face with the gash on, it's still more handsome than me, even in that moment. Alexa. This is one of those things. This is a relative complaint, obviously, because they're winning and it's awesome. A lot of come from behind wins in there, though. A lot of periods like that first one against Montreal, they're able to dig out of it, which speaks to, you know, the resiliency. You know, there's no panic in that room, and that's awesome. But eventually, doesn't your luck run out? Eventually, is that kind of, I don't want to say not sustainable, but it's something that I'm kind of keeping a gentle eye on as I'm enjoying the wins. Your thoughts?
Yeah, it is your point. I mean, it would save some of us. Like, really, do we have to be the cardiac Caps? Like, can we just lead games and not give us a stressful final 20 minutes of hockey? But I'm not going to look at it as negatively, because I think the good news is we're scoring a lot of goals, and you take a look as well. We lead the league in goals per game average, so we can come back, we can climb back. I think it says more about what the room is like and the reason that they never waver in these moments. Now, again, even when you see their pace, you always worry, like, is this going to slow down? But to me, hey, I'd rather be putting up those goals. You're at the top of the league, and say you come down a little bit, well, you're still towards the top. So I'll take it. Any win, anyhow we could get it, I'll take it.
What is your biggest takeaway from this opening stretch of the season, and/or, like, where are you most impressed about the growth? Because it's pretty stunning how big of a turnaround this has been, how fast it's happened.
Yeah. I think, to your point, it's just the turnaround. I mean, I think we added seven or more players this offseason, and I was excited about getting younger guys under 30 in this roster. But, you know, when you put a group of guys together, you never know if it's going to mesh personalities on and off the ice. So I think what I've been most impressed with in the first 25 games is how quickly this group seems to have found chemistry with each other. I mean, Jacob Chychrun, now what he's been able to do, Pierre-Luc Dubois, everyone was saying, like, can they get him to old-fashioned PLD form? Like, he wasn't that with the Kings and wasn't that in the stops before, and they're getting the most out of him. So I think just getting the most out of their players this early on in the season is so exciting and what's impressed me the most. And then obviously right now what they did with the grade eight and without Alex Ovechkin in the lineup is also so impressive. And I think too, just going to the goaltenders, I think I got to highlight Logan Thompson's game a little bit as well. I was a big Charlie Lindgren fan coming off of last season, and Logan Thompson, what he's been able to do for this team has been incredible. So to have two number one goalies and have all of these players meshing this early on is super exciting. And I think what's caught my eye the most in the league, and I'm just hoping we keep this pace up. And to Alan's point, no one in the Four Nations, so we weren't very happy about that. But we'll take a long playoff run and have the guys get a few weeks break versus playing for their countries in February.
Yeah, speaking of break, it's weird. The schedule always drives me crazy before Christmas. I think it kind of gets into a better rhythm maybe, you know, after the New Year. But back-to-back games, then, you know, nearly 5 days off before they play Thursday against Columbus. Is that good, bad? Your thoughts on kind of that mini layoff?
Yeah, it's funny. I asked Alan May that same question on our post-game show. I'm thinking we're doing really well right now. We're rolling. I don't know if I want 4 days off in between games. But I think for where we're at, and obviously any days that we can have off right now, give Ovi some extra time, even though it's unbelievable what he's been able to do, like, indeed, on the ice 2 weeks after breaking his leg. Like, the guy's insane at his age to be doing that. So I think, and Tom Wilson getting some rest as well. So I think it was a good reset. It is kind of funky how the schedule works out, but I'm looking at it as let's reset, let's get healthy. We've had a few other funky breaks, and we've been fine coming back. So I think it'll be no problem for the guys bouncing back here on Thursday.
Alexa, thank you. Look forward to seeing you guys back on my TV screen ahead of Caps hockey on Thursday night. Thank you.
Awesome, Granddaddy. Appreciate it. See you.
Be good. Alexa Landestoy, the best. By the way, her husband, Michael.
Uh-huh.
Is a baseball scout who works for the Pittsburgh Pirates.
How about that?
And a very sharp baseball gentleman. I like talking ball with him. He's a good dude. All right, let's keep it moving. On the hardwood, Bijan Todd covers the Wizards. Why don't we just start with the fact, I know this is dated and there's a lot of basketball that's happened since. They won a game.
Here we go.
This weekend, a real life basketball game over the Nuggets. What happened? Is that allowed? Are we sure? Are they recounting the score? What was that?
They recounted the score about three or four times, and it is confirmed the Wizards won a game.
Yes.
We just
confirmed.
Popping the confetti.
Confirmed.
The big deal. We were able to avoid the dreaded 17-game losing streak that would have set the franchise record. So we stayed at 16, and it was a good win, you guys. You know, Jordan Poole dropped 39 points. They couldn't contain Nikola Jokic. He had 56 of his own, but luckily his supporting cast wasn't that good. So they stand at 3-18, and I think we're all crossing our fingers that we're not going to see another 16-game losing streak this season, but TBD.
Justin Champagne? Question mark?
He's a good dude, man. He grinds, and I think if you talk to anybody around the organization, they'll praise him. He was the ACC Player of the Year back at Pitt way back when, and Wizards have had him in the organization for a couple of years now. He's on a two-way contract, plays with the go-go a lot. And, you know, you see a team like the Wizards with all these injuries, you're going to have to start playing a lot of the other guys, so to speak, and he's one of them. And, you know, he stepped in that Denver win, scored 23 points, put up 8 rebounds, shot the ball really well, actually,
yes,
in that game. So you have guys like that, guys like Jared Butler, who spend most of their time with the go-go, next man up mentality. You see an injury, you find yourself in the starting lineup, and you go off and you perform at that level. So it was good to see from him.
Bijan, I feel like Koulibaly's cooled off a little bit offensively. I know he had 17 against Memphis the other night, but single digits, I think, in at least four in a row before that. My thought here, and I want your comment on this, I think, you know, after a nice early start where, you know, he was getting some shots kind of in the flow of the offense, maybe now he's higher up on the scouting report, especially without Kyle Kuzma out there and maybe some other offensive options. I think defense have said, okay, fine, let's see if you can do it. They're adjusting. Now, again, he's so young. This is not a criticism. It's just maybe an observation. I think maybe he's kind of struggling to adjust, and I'm perfectly fine with him long term. But kind of give me your thoughts on where he's at.
Yeah, that's a good point. You know, teams are definitely starting to adjust for him on both ends. You know, on the for his defensive end, he's obviously been like the go-to defender for the Wizards guarding. He is so good. He's guarded the best player on every team pretty much since he came into the league last year. But yeah, you know, he's playing like 35 minutes a game this year, which is a sharp increase from last year. And some people are saying that his legs are tired because he had all that work in the Olympics this past year and he's having to do all this for the Wizards this year. I think it's just a classic sophomore slump. Like, he is struggling to score the ball a little bit. But if you talk to Wizards coaches and Koulibaly himself, they say, hey, defense and offense go hand in hand. You know, the better I defend, the more confidence I get on both ends, I can start putting the ball in the hoop a little bit more. And Brian Keefe even said that his defense has gotten better within the last 2 weeks, which is kind of hard to imagine. So I think you give him a couple more weeks here, let him get his feet under him a little bit. He's going to have stretches where he won't be able to score as well, but you know, this year he is shooting the ball about 44%, I want to say, from the field, which is basically the exact same as he shot last year. So, you know, even for him, a dip in his offensive production is still not that bad. And I think he'll be a little bit more consistent here going forward.
Last time out, 140 given up to the Grizzlies. Now they get a little respite before they take on Cleveland coming up, but I mean, defensively, it just seems like this is how it's going to go, right? They talk a lot about defense, and when they give up these types of performances, they're very upset. But I feel like this is kind of what's going to happen, no?
Yeah, you know, it's tough because the Wizards, every time you talk to Brian Keefe, he's like, it's going to be a communal effort. We need multiple guys guarding multiple guys, and you want to have positional versatility and all that. But when you buy into a sort of program like this, like the Wizards have, where you want players to guard multiple positions, you do sacrifice a little bit of that stability. You know, sometimes you want your point guard to guard their point guard, et cetera. So when you have like a player like Koulibaly, for example, who has to guard the four at different times, or the two, or the one, it kind of lends itself to being a little bit more hectic. Wizards have had a really tough time guarding the three ball this year. It seems like every time they take on a good three-point shooting team, that team will just go off. So it'll be a good chance for them this week to regroup, kind of gather themselves defensively before a really tough slate coming up. Like you mentioned, they got Cleveland on Friday, Boston on Sunday. They're going to take on Milwaukee and OKC before Christmas. So it's going to be tough for them for sure. And then when you have all these injuries on top of that, you know, with Sarr being injured and Kuzma and Brogdon, some of their best defenders, it's going to get tougher before it gets better, I think. But they're going to enjoy these next couple days off and hopefully regroup before Friday.
Bijan, thank you, buddy.
Appreciate you guys. Thanks
Talk
a lot.
Talk soon, my friend. Hit that local 53 sounder, Darius. Our pal Earl Forsey will talk about the local 53. Earl, New Orleans is beat up. No Derek Carr. I'm not sure he would have helped that much if he was healthy, but he ain't. It's a backup. They got no receiving options. They got to win this weekend, right?
You got no food. Our pets are falling off.
Yeah. Yeah, Derek Carr, you know, going down and injured, and they still, you know, are not saying for sure, but a concussion and a broken hand. I'm guessing he's not playing this weekend. Yeah, and look, I mentioned this, I think, once earlier today. The line was 3.5 on the game this weekend. I checked on Sunday while games were going on. It jumped to 6.5. Now it's 7. So the boys in Vegas, as the Rooster likes to call them, certainly took notice of that. Yeah, this is Danny, it's set up for him. Look, I think New Orleans is a tough place to play. I know we can say, well, it's the Aints, and probably folks are showing up with bags again, and they're not a good team. But they've been better since their coaching change. The interim coach takes over. They're 3-1. They've given up less than 16 points a game in that four-game stretch. One was 21 points and a loss to the Rams. We know how good that offense is. So these things are never easy. And until this team, you know, it's a new regime, new everything, but until they start getting over these hurdles, and they've done a lot of it this season, you know, and this hurdle is you put yourself in position. You're in a playoff spot with 1 month to go. Now let's go finish it off. Until they do these things and on the field, I think fans are going to be skeptical. But yes, this is a game on the road. They should win. And it's a Marshawn Lattimore potentially revenge game as well if he gets back on the field for the first time for the Commanders.
Earl, I think we both assume Washington's going to make the playoffs. But in a world where somehow they didn't, would you be able to would you be able to both say, hey, that was a heck of a first year. Daniels is the guy. No. Dan Quinn did an awesome job. But also, that's a meltdown that can't happen.
It's the answer all the kids say, yeah, no. So, yeah, you can say it's a success. Look, the bottom line is we know that if you found the quarterback and you picked the right guy, and I think the answer is yes, whatever the record is, it's a successful season, right, long term. But when you're 8-5 and you now have an 85% chance, according to ESPN, 81% chance, according to NFL.com, of making the playoffs, you got to finish the deal. Or, hey, finish the deal, right? I mean, this is they've changed the expectations, and really a big part of it is that quarterback. What a difference one guy at one position in a pro sport makes. Grant, they have a guy now at quarterback, and I'm not heaping too much praise on him. Universally across the NFL, whether it's coaches, players, analysts, whatever, have been singing his praises, and rightfully so. You have arguably, look at some of the numbers, not all of them, but some of the numbers, and many of them, are putting him as a top five quarterback in the NFL this season, in his rookie season. When you have a top five guy at that position, you have a team that has a chance in any game they play. So, yes, it would be but I was chastising fans this weekend on Countdown to Kickoff for limiting their expectations and being happy with okay. And they won four games a year ago. So you know what? 8 wins, that's a good season. Not now. Not at 8-5. Not at number 7. No, it's not. You got to finish this thing off, make the playoffs, and see what can happen. Even if you play Philadelphia, Grant, we almost saw the Carolina Panthers beat them this week. If the guy hangs onto the ball, Philadelphia lost that game. And they're winning, and you've been talking about it all day. They're bickering again. And we saw the Commanders lead that game late in Philadelphia early this year. So to think they have no chance if it ends up being Philadelphia in the playoffs, that's wrong too. They've got a chance. And a big reason is that guy number 5 behind center now at quarterback.
Earl, thank you as always, buddy. Talk soon.
Yep. Yeah, guys.
See you, dude.
Earl Forsey, when you hear the glass, it's Earl. Coming
it's
on
Earl.
The blitz.
It's a sign for Earl.
To chop it up.
Yep.
I think that's the same.
That's how it goes, right?
Attaboy, Earl. G&D with you on the fan. The Commanders are getting ready for the Saints. We'll get into that next. Also, Monday Night Football last night was a matchup between two big disappointments this year. What teams have been the biggest surprise and the biggest disappointment in the NFL? We'll get to that on Grant and Danny. Grant and Danny on the fan. Welcome back, and thank you for making the show part of your day. It means a lot. Austin Eckler will be on the program coming up at 5 o'clock. That's a half hour from right now. Last night, we had two super disappointments playing on Monday Night Football. The Bengals, who are not going to make the playoffs in the AFC despite Joe Burrow having an MVP-caliber season, and the Cowboys, who won the NFC East last year, came into the season expected to either go back-to-back in the East or to make the playoffs with a wild card like Cincinnati. They're now 5-8. So I thought that'd be a nice launching point to discuss the biggest surprise and the biggest disappointment in football at this point, which we'll get into in just a moment. But first, Darris, a little game show music, please, if you would be so kind. We'll go around the horn.
Oh, man.
May the best man win. The Washington Commanders play the New Orleans Saints on Sunday. What broadcast crew are we getting for Commanders Saints? And if you already know the answer, I would ask that you recuse yourself.
Can I look up the broadcast? I'm not looking up the actual game. I can never remember the teams out of my head.
We don't need any computers. We're fine. Everybody's fine.
I can never remember the guys.
You're still clicking.
Yeah, I'm looking up the broadcast teams.
You don't need to do that. Who do you think's calling the game? It's Fox.
Okay.
You got a pretty good idea of who's on
Fox. I can never remember who they are off the top of my head when it's game show time. I ruined the game for you, so I'm trying to remember all the different guys. All right, so it's not Kevin Burkhardt. That's the top team. It's not his team. So I'm going to say it's not Kevin Burkhardt. That's my answer. Who are the other teams? Who's like the seventh seed
Ryan,
team?
Ryan, I'll go to you.
I'm going to say Joe Davis and Greg Olsen.
It's Joe Davis and Greg Olsen.
Now,
not that hard. That's all we're trying to do. That went great. We'll move along now. Now that I'm properly frustrated by how that went, it doesn't have to be complicated.
I just never remember the teams.
You watch a lot of football.
I do.
You don't have a pretty good beat on who calls games?
I mean, I know the big ones.
Okay. Joe Davis, pretty damn big one.
Yep.
Calls the World Series.
Yeah, Joe Davis is really good.
Golden Pipes, number two team with Greg Olsen. Nothing there. All right, that's fine. Biggest surprise in the NFL this season. What team?
So this is probably not a great answer, but it is for me. Or it's my answer. It's the Steelers. I thought the Steelers were going to be pedestrian. They're going, let's opt into a Justin Fields and Russell Wilson situation after he was cast out of a second straight team over the span of only a few seasons. I thought it was going to be a train wreck, and they were going to finish under 500 for the first time in forever. Nope. 10-3 record, one of the best records in the NFL, despite a really difficult schedule and a really difficult division. They've been awesome, and really, it's been their offense that's been remarkable. So I know that Pittsburgh winning shouldn't be a big surprise to anybody because they always win. But how they're doing it, with how proficient this offense is, it's just a tip of the cap type moment to that group who I thought would be pedestrian, okay, maybe at best, and sort of fight it out as they always do, winning games because they blocked a punt or the other team missed a field goal. No, that is a legit squad.
It's a good one. How about the Minnesota Vikings? I thought they'd be better than most people did. I had them as
a
wild card because they had so much talent, even though they lost Cousins at quarterback. I loved their defense last year, came on like gangbusters second half of the season. Brian Flores is a dude, should be a head coach in the league again. Big fan of his. And Kevin O'Connell's an outstanding offensive coach. But I did not think they'd get this much out of Sam Darnold, who after going for basically 350 and 5, this weekend, I believe, is now up to 28 touchdowns and 10 picks. He had a rough patch for a couple of weeks where he turned the ball over a little more than he had been, kind of played uneasy football, and I just wasn't convinced he'd get back on track, but he has. They are outstanding. They play great defense. They're pretty good on special teams. Offensively, they're explosive. They can run the ball better than they have in recent years. The Vikings are going to be a tough out, and they are definitely, for me, the biggest surprise in the NFL.
Weakness? Or most disappointing team? I don't know why I say weakness first. Most disappointing team is the Jets. This one's too easy. Some idiot, I'm not going to name any names, but it was me, predicted they would win the AFC East and Buffalo would take a step back because of all the talent that they kept losing.
At least you didn't have them in the Super Bowl. A lot of people did.
Yeah, that was just like the loudest all-time wrongest thing I probably ever said. 3-10, and they're a disaster. They're worse than they've been. Because you look at that roster and you go, I'd love to have Garrett Wilson. Man, I'd love to have Breece Hall. This is a defense that has been really, really good despite how horrendous their quarterback play has been over the last several seasons, putting them in bad spot after bad spot. And here they are, an elite division-winning playoff caliber, maybe even championship caliber group. And that is a really, really good team that all they need is some model of decency at quarterback and they'll be good. And they have been one disaster after the next. Despite that talent, they are 3-10 and picking in the top five.
Biggest disappointment for me has been the San Francisco 49ers. I would have thought right now they were 10-3 or 9-4, and they're 6-7 and probably going to miss the playoffs. Now, they have a good excuse. Trent Williams has missed time. Christian McCaffrey has missed almost the entire year. In fact, their backup running back has been hurt as well. Deebo Samuel has missed time. Brandon Ayuk's missed most of the season. I mean, they have been decimated by injuries. It seems to happen to them more than a lot of teams for whatever reason. I think you have enough injury-prone guys.
Yeah, every few years, whatever this is happens to them.
Exactly. Yeah. You have enough dudes on your roster who are, I don't even want to say old, but like aging and play that physical, violent brand of football that they do collectively as an organization. Well, guess what? You're going to have some injuries, and that certainly happens to them. But still, for San Francisco to be sitting here at 6-7, they could run the table, I guess, beat the Rams, Dolphins, Lions, and Cardinals, and get to 10-7 and maybe still get in. But it's unlikely. Better chance that they finish 7-10 or 8-9 or something like that. And after a stretch where they were in the NFC Championship game every year, that's a huge step back. They might actually, I don't think they'll blow it up, but I could see them.
They have to do something.
Rearranging the deck chairs here on the ship.
Yeah, as they're about to pay Brock Purdy $1 trillion or
Brock will get 60-plus mil. They already paid Ayuk. I bet you Deebo Samuel's gone. I wouldn't be surprised if a couple of their key pieces, maybe Trent Williams is gone. Now they're going to have to regroup.
Yes, they've layered some talent. Maybe, you know, they drafted Pearsall in the first round, and Juwan Jennings has played well in Sparta. So you have to like, kind of basically, you know, you picked one when you signed Ayuk. So yeah, I could see some guys moving on. But I pointed this out previously. Every so often, this just happens to them, right? Where they are so good when they're right, they go 13-3. When they're not, it's a 6-10, 4-12. They just can't get right. There's always one step forward, 10 steps sideways, 3 steps back, and they're just never the same. They show signs of it even during those years where they're just not that good, as again they did in 2020, they're doing it now here in 24, but they just can't seem to get out of their own way talking about the 49ers. But yeah, the thing was, we sort of didn't, I don't want to say we didn't notice it because everyone did. A lot of people had them, you know, going far because, again, they usually do. But that division was so vulnerable for so long. Before kind of Seattle took charge of it, Arizona was up there at the top for a while. You're going, yeah, well, nobody's any good. Now you look up, and there's San Francisco looking up at everybody.
Another surprise, team that's been better than I would have thought. How about the L.A. Chargers or the Denver Broncos? I mean, you could go with either of the 8-5
Broncos are my second answer, yeah.
In the AFC West, right? I mean, those teams both have a chance right now at double-digit wins. Year one of a head coach. We know all about that here in D.C. Jim Harbaugh wins everywhere he goes initially and then kind of wears out his welcome. He's one of those guys that grates on you, it seems like. But Sean Payton, where are all the Sean Payton jokes? Remember, he was like enemy of the state number one. Everyone hated that guy's guts because he was mean to Russell Wilson, said terrible things about Sean Payton. I think he handled a situation really poorly with Robert Saleh where he like made fun of their handling of something. What was that deal about? That everyone hated Sean Payton because he was mean to Robert Saleh? Does anybody remember this?
I'm trying to know what you're talking about. He said the way they handled something. Was it the Jets or was it a different team? I don't remember being Saleh
sure
specifically.
It was Saleh.
Could be right.
Was it Rodgers related? He basically like acted like he was an NFL analyst at the podium and was like commenting on another team. Let me see. The Denver Broncos head coach Sean Payton was brought in to fix the most embarrassing team from 2022. Payton specifically pointed to former head coach Nathaniel Hackett. That's what it is.
Yeah, it was Hackett and Denver. Yeah, there we go.
They can only beat the blank out of you so much, Payton told USA Today, but everybody's got a little stink on their hands. It's not Russell. It was a poor offensive line. I mean, yeah, he crushed Nathaniel Hackett in the job he did in Denver, which, by the way, he said nothing incorrect.
Yeah, he was right. Just weird to hear someone do it.
But like, do you remember last year that his Q rating just was in the dumpster?
Oh, totally. Yeah, everyone was mad.
Everyone thought he was the biggest jerk, the biggest idiot, the biggest moron in the league. All he's done this year is turned Bo Nix into a really good quarterback, and he's 8-5.
Yeah, they're 8-5.
I don't hear anybody screaming about him anymore.
Here's another disappointment. The Chicago Bears, remember they were next? This was a group, listen, admittedly a really, really tough division because that NFC North is going to have 3 playoff teams pretty much, you know, lock that up. But still, nobody thought they'd be 4-9 at this stage, right? Coach let go. Everyone's kind of wondering, did they really have it? I mean, they had all the talent in the world. They've done a really shrewd job over the last several seasons, accruing draft picks, kind of moving around the board, adding talent, the Montez Sweats of the world, number of first-round picks. Just you stock the cabinet full for a team that was going to be on the rise. And again, I say they are 4-9.
Jacksonville, 3-10.
That's a good one.
Trevor Lawrence, another tough year. I would even say after getting paid, regressed this season. Doug Peterson, maybe we got to go from visors to hats or something. The visor's not working for him. I think he gets fired. I think they have a new GM and a new head coach. In fact, what I've been saying pretty loudly is that Bill Belichick's going to be hired to run the entire operation. But Belichick is supposedly still trying to get this UNC job, which I'll believe when I see it. I know this is a weird time to say it because all signs are pointing toward him wanting that job, at least according to reporting today. I just don't believe that. I'm sorry. I will believe Bill Belichick's the coach. I won't even believe him at a press conference. Like, this is going to be...
He was like, we're on to NC State. You won't believe it?
This is going to be Leonsis over at National Landing to me. I will believe that Bill Belichick...
You won't start memeing it.
I don't even think I will believe that Bill Belichick's going to coach UNC if he's on the sideline in week one. I'll just assume...
In a UNC polo?
Yeah, I'll assume that it's a joke, and he's, like, just pranking everyone. He has to get through one full season before I'll believe it. I'm sorry. It's not a thing to me. He's going to be back in the NFL. I got him running the Jaguars.
Another disappointing team. I got plenty of those. Cowboys. 3 straight years of 12 wins. They're 5-8. Dak's hurt for the season. Talks of McCarthy getting fired. A lot of discord down there. They just can't get out of their own way. Losing very winnable games. They're not terrible, but they're also 5-8.
What was going on in the world the last time the Commanders were 9-5? With a win in New Orleans that they should get on Sunday, they will be 9-5. That's next on Grant and Danny here on The Fan. You know, today at 5:30 is the Major League Baseball draft lottery. And the Nationals will find out what draft pick they have, like every other team in Major League Baseball will today. But Washington's right near the top of the board again. Their chances of the number one pick are right around 10% today.
Pittsburgh got it last year, right? With 2%? Something to that effect, right?
Well, remember, last year the Nats actually got the number one overall pick. People sleep on this. But they weren't allowed to get it because the previous season they picked second. And because, even though we don't act like it, we're in a major market, we aren't allowed to pick in the top 10 in consecutive years, or in the top 9, I guess it was. So last year, the highest they could have picked was 10. So they still have their ping pong balls in the machine, and they go through, and they go, the number one pick? Oh, it's the Curly W. Well, they can't have it.
Well, they're not allowed.
So that was last year. So we need that same luck this year. 10.2% chance of getting the top pick. They ended up with the fourth best chance, essentially, behind the Rockies, Marlins, and Angels as far as the top pick. But the baseball process, I've harped on this. We don't need to get into the specifics today. Tomorrow, actually, on the show, we'll recap how the draft lottery went. We'll obviously give you the details live at 5:30, but we could also go into all the specifics. But the White Sox, just know this, were the worst team that I've ever seen in my entire life this year. And I don't mean like, oh, that's a bad baseball team. I mean, by way of record, I've never seen anything like it. They were 41-121. It was one of the worst baseball teams in history at any professional level in terms of winning percentage. They're going to pick 10th this year. The A's, who, 69 wins, right? So, worse than the Nationals, worse than the Blue Jays and the Pirates and the Reds and the Rangers, all these teams will pick below all of them as well because of their recent draft slots. So this is where I'm just not a fan of the lottery system, and I would go back to how bad you are dictating where you get to pick. But then again, I'm one of the few people that doesn't have a problem with the Orioles rebuilding over 5 years and trying to pick 1-1. The Cubs, the Astros, these teams that correctly tanked and rebuilt, like the Washington Nationals, have tried as best that they could do, losing at the big league level while building up the system. This new philosophy, this new rule from baseball in this collectively bargained addendum to the draft a couple years ago during the pandemic before they came back to play, changed their ability to pick at the top of the board every year, which stinks. But hopefully, fingers crossed, they climb from 4 higher up the board. Because in baseball, when the closer you get to one man, think Bryce Harper.
Yeah.
Think Steven Strasburg.
And it depends on the year. Sometimes you don't have that, but sometimes you do.
Yeah, I mean, they got Rendon at 6.
Mm-hmm.
So occasionally some guys will fall down the board. But yeah, the higher you are, obviously, the better for business. So we'll let you know what happens coming up at a little after 5:30 today when they make that announcement at the winter meetings in Major League Baseball. Have you ever been to the winter meetings?
Never have.
They're a blast. The last time I went a couple times early on traveling to them, but the last and most recent time I went was at the Gaylord here in D.C.
Oh, that's right. They were here.
Happened to be in our backyard. It's the coolest thing ever. I was explaining it to Ryan yesterday. It's basically like a baseball sleepover, essentially.
Just like you walk down to the lobby and there's the manager, this guy. Yeah.
They have it in a hotel.
Uh-huh.
So like you walk around this area and I mean, there are some restrictions, to be clear, like, hey, this is an area where you need a credential or whatever. But for the most part, all the media that go, so if you're Danny Ruye or you run the blog in the, Seattle on the Mariners or whatever, you get a credential, you can kind of roam the lobby. So do the GMs. So do the team presidents. So does every person that's there, which ranges from the single-A broadcaster who's trying to get a job in double-A and pass out. I was about to say CDs, but that's kind of antiquated.
Sure, yeah.
But memory sticks with his calls to the guy from Louisville Slugger, who's trying to get high school teams to get his bats in their winter league. I mean, everyone is there. Broadcasters and bat companies. If it is involved with baseball, hey, I'm Frank from Grant Sunflower Seeds. You got to try these sunflower seeds.
They're great.
It is the coolest thing ever. I love it.
It is, it's one of those like where the business gets done. I mean, think of the combine with the NFL. I don't know how many other similar events there are where everyone just decides, okay, we're all getting together here. So you want to hammer stuff out? every agent, every GM, you know, we'll walk in with a plan about who we're talking to and when. But it's similar where the combine is, right? Where once you get all the executives in one spot, stuff starts percolating.
Yeah.
Right? So those check-in reports with Tim Kirkchin, just voice cracking from down there, or Jeff Passan or whomever else, right? Where you find out, well, this guy talked to this guy. Well, they went and had coffee. What are they talking about? You know, like what two major leaguers or what seven-team trade are they cooking up? It's where all the business happens.
Jeff Passan working the phones, getting the news. I'm just looking for the update on all of them. Sweepstakes, the Nationals.
Well, your phone will be buzzing. Look for it because it's buzzing.
Hold on. It's got to be right over here somewhere. This is the offseason, right? They're going to start spending. Hold on. Yep. Keep waiting on those updates.
Waiting on the updates there.
Earl's doing an update here at the top of the hour. I'm sure we'll find out they've signed a couple of guys then. Just, we haven't seen it yet. It's like the old school. Nobody's tweeting about it. But Earl's going to have it right at the top. Make sure you're listening. The Commanders with a win against New Orleans on Sunday.
Uh-huh.
They're now a 7-point favorite. Started as 3, then 3.5, then 6, now 7. Because Derek Carr's not going to play.
Derek Carr's out.
So you're going to get a really bad backup quarterback, very likely. A win gets them to 9-5. That would be 9 wins through 14 games for the first time since 1992. I don't know what you know about 1992.
I was there.
The first George Bush was president, and I was 4 years old. That's what I know about 1992.
Mm-hmm.
I was in preschool. I had just gotten a kitten named Whiskers.
Really?
Whiskers.
That's real?
That's real. What surprises you about that?
That's like a sitcom where like they bring on like, here's the cat for comedic relief. Like the cat's name is Whiskers. Like that, really?
I mean, when you're 4, I don't know how good you are at naming things.
All right, I guess that's right.
I named him Whiskers. Yeah. They found him running around outside of Peace Lutheran, which was my little preschool, at pickup time, and someone's like, Janine, and that was my mom, and they're like, this cat is just like, I don't know why, but we had to take him home, and then we got attached to him, and so that was our cat.
Whiskers.
That's about what I got for you.
Okay.
The movies in 1992, it looks like. Last of the Mohicans.
Silly, by the way.
Is that a good one?
Oh, it's all time. Daniel Day-Lewis, man.
I don't think, you know what? I definitely know what the movie is. I haven't seen it. Isn't it like 3.5 hours long?
No, it's a little over 2. It is an all-timer.
Okay.
If you're like, I'm not sure if I believe in Daniel Day-Lewis as an actor. You watch it, and you go, okay, I get it. He's so good, and the movie's great.
You know what other movie came out in 1992? A Few Good Men.
Yes, it did.
It's a damn good movie.
So 92-93 is about as good as it ever got for films.
It seems like an aggressive comment.
Look it up. Look up the
I mean, I don't see that many more smashola's here. The Bodyguard.
Eh.
Like, what? This is not an all-time year. Scent of a Woman. It's famous, but okay.
It's a great flick.
Forever Young.
Yeah.
A River Runs Through It.
Silly. It's Brad Pitt.
But are we saying, you're saying one of the all-time years for movies?
So 92 and 93. So it's like that's like your Forrest Gump, Pulp Fiction, Shawshank Redemption's right in there somewhere. Goodfellas is right in there.
Beethoven.
That was nubs.
Shawshank was 94.
Oh, so I missed it by year.
Forrest Gump was 94. I think you're
so conflated years. Yeah. Fine, but like right in that region, there was like it was like a factory. You know what I mean? Nothing but original smashables. Yeah.
All right, let me look up 1994 movies. We got to get ready for Austin Eckler, by the way, coming up top of the hour. So 94 is silly, by the way. Now this is the greatest year of film for me ever, probably. Major League, Little Giants, Little Big League. This was the year of just
the kid
sports movie. Trapped in Paradise. You sleep on that movie.
I have no file on that.
One of my favorite Christmas movies. I got to call my dad tonight, see if he's watched it. Watch this movie. I'm telling you guys, if you've never seen it, you'll love it. Great Christmas movie. I tell you about it every year, and you tell me you've never heard of it. It's like an annual tradition on the show. Nicolas Cage, Dana Carvey, and John Lovitz.
What?
Are brother criminals who end up in this small town while they're on the run. And basically, everyone's looking for them, and they're taken in by the people who I think they robbed their bank or something. It's outstanding. Trapped in Paradise.
It's got a 10% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Check it out. You'll love it. Great Christmas movie. Austin Eckler joins us next on G&D here on The Fan.